and well met. Welcome to another episode of Self Evident. My name is Jenna, and with me today is...
Just Alyssa today.
That's right. And we have a very special guest on today. We are here today with Camille Kiefel, and she has a wonderful ministry of helping people who are struggling with gender dysphoria and who want to detransition. And she has her own story that she is more than willing to share with others, and thankfully she's willing to share with us today. So Camille, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. What's your story?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So, I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot there. And I feel like that's the same with many detransitioners.
Yeah.
I mean, I was struggling with mental health issues in grade school, and due to some traumatic events during that time, I ended up starting to present more masculine. I started to, I almost want to say reject my femininity. Like, there was a lot of discomfort there, and trauma does a lot. It really messes things up. I was really struggling for the longest time. In college, I was introduced to the idea of being non-binary. For me, this in activism was a way of dealing with the issues I was struggling with. Like, I thought this was the answer, and this was going to finally provide some relief.
Yeah.
So in 2020, I was at the end of my rope. I'd done about 20 years of traditional talk therapy, pretty much the gold standard DBT, which is dialectical behavior therapy. So I was taking a skill-based approach to mental health. Mm-hmm. I was also did a treatment called TMS, which is transcranial magnetic stimulation therapy. And okay. It's reserved for individuals with treatment-resistant depression. And in 2020, I was on the second round of this and not able to take medications because of the adverse effects. I didn't know what else to do. I was still struggling with discomfort around my breasts, and I still had a lot of issues with gender, and I was like, this is it, because I had tried everything else
mm-hmm.
that I'd known of at that time. And so I reached out to my doctor. I said, okay, I'm non-binary. I don't even know if we can do this surgery, but this is something I'm thinking about. And so he connected me with somebody through Providence.
I wanted to ask you regarding was it cranial therapy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, transcranial magnet stimulation therapy. Yes.
Yes. What does that involve?
Yeah. TMS. What TMS involves is where they put a helmet on your head and they have these magnets in there and it stimulates your brain.
Okay.
And it's a cousin to ECT or electroconvulsive therapy.
Gotcha.
Does not have the same risks. So with electroconvulsive therapy, you could potentially get something or deal with a condition like anti-retrograde amnesia.
Wow.
So there's actually, if you look on YouTube, there's a woman, or her YouTube handle is something along the line of Ketamine Saved Me.
Okay.
And she talks about her experience with anti-retrograde amnesia. It's sad. It's like, if you've seen the movie Memento where he's writing everything down, it's like mm-hmm. that. Like, she's putting post-it notes everywhere because she can't retain her memory like she used to.
That is so sad.
And it's so sad. And I think for so many of us who are really struggling with mental illness, you know, we look for solutions to find improvement. What I'd found after all this had happened, after I did this surgery and I developed all these health issues, is that I was pretty much left on my own, because doctors, once they thought I had psychosomatic fever, they stopped taking me seriously.
Wow.
So I was on my own, and I'm struggling with tinnitus so loud I can't sleep at night. I'm struggling with bony promises, like I was Raynaud's, things just I had never dealt with, nerve pain, like all these issues.
And this is after the surgery.
After the surgery. I'm dealing with all these health issues, and they stopped taking me seriously.
Did that mean that they were not going to, they did not believe you that you were dealing with all of these issues, with like all of these after effects of the surgery?
Well, they thought it was psychosomatic. So they thought it was pretty much all in my head. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing is I even had like a urinary tract infection, and it actually showed up in the results that there was something wrong and they didn't do anything about it. Like they didn't recommend like, oh, you can do these solutions for this. And I mean, I took sertraline again, kind of like I said before, like I don't respond well to medications.
Mm-hmm.
For like mental health, psychiatric medications is maybe the best way to put it. They prescribed me sertraline and I have an allergic reaction to the medication. Like he looks at it and he's like, I think this is a systemic rash. I said, well, should I stop taking the medication then and find something else? Like, let's see what our options are. And he said, no, you need to continue taking the medications.
Oh, wow.
So I'm being told by my doctor to take a medication I'm allergic to. And I did it for a long time. And I was like, and I upped the dose because I'm really struggling mentally. I had scopolamine poisoning at the same time. So they put a patch behind your ear to help with nausea.
Wow.
And I had gotten scopolamine poisoning. The problem is that it's supposed to go away after like a month and that okay. Your eyes dilated and then it goes away. Well, it never went away. And actually this eye never went back to normal years later. Like it feels off to me. Like it's just yeah. Like there's mm-hmm. nerve and maybe it was like nerve damage or something. Like it just like it, I can feel it. It just like it feels off and it's just, I've never had this issue before.
Right.
And so I'm getting the scopolamine poisoning and then like I up my sertraline dose and only this eye dilates. And I'm talking to the nurse and the nurse wants me to stop my supplement, but not the sertraline. And at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to finally not listen to my doctors and just lower my dose and get off the thing yeah. safely. So I slowly tapered off,
mm-hmm.
but I had to do it without a doctor because, you know.
They were not listening to you. They did not believe you.
No, they didn't take me seriously. And all they wanted me to do was to see a therapist. They said, go see a therapist. And actually, in the doctor's note, my doctor is kind of frustrated because I'm not seeing a therapist. And it's like, well,
mm-hmm.
I did this for 20 years. I know that therapy is not the answer for me. And I have all the skills that I got from DBT and, you know, other forms of right. therapy. I know what I need to do. This isn't yeah. the issue. And so I'm struggling with these physical health issues. And then I see Michaela Peterson and she's on a carnivore diet. And I was like, wow, she seems so emotionally stable. I'm going to try and add meat back into my diet. Because for over a decade, the only form of meat I was eating was fish and I wasn't eating it that often. And the thing is that so many of my doctors knew that I had this diet, like that as a pescatarian.
Right.
But none of them had explained to me that there's all these nutrients in meat that you can't get out of plants. Like that it's, you can't get them out of plants. And then they're more absorbable when you eat meat products. Wow. And so I start feeling better. I start doing manual therapy. And I remember when I was doing manual therapy, I was doing a treatment called Bowen. And it's similar to massage, what manual therapy is. And it's sometimes it's a little bit more, well, not necessarily intentional, but it can't, there's different, it's not necessarily as hard. I think when we think massage, we think of like that cartoon cat, like pulling at the dog and stuff like that. And the therapy can be a little bit more gentle, but it's very intentional. I did my first Bowen session and I was thinking to myself, this is the, what I needed for the last 30 years. Like, this is it. And it just, I don't know if it's, I've heard things like bad feedback loops or whatnot. And I don't know, like maybe there's just something stuck in the nervous system or whatnot. I don't know why it works, but I did notice an improvement when I did that, continued on with my diet as a part of a hyperbaric oxygen therapy case study. Okay. What hyperbaric oxygen therapy is when you receive pure oxygen in a pressurized environment. So you have like a simple mask and you're in like a chamber and sometimes they're hard, sometimes they're soft. Sometimes it's like a room that's pressurized.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a soft chamber because that's usually what's going to be more accessible to the public.
Yeah.
I did 60 treatments and my generalized anxiety disorder went away. So it was like 20, I can't remember the exact numbers, like 26.6 or something. Like it was a significant improvement. But my ADHD, which I was marking over, which I was documenting over 60 days, mm-hmm. went from 72 points to 6.
Wow. That is so impressive.
It was amazing. It was remarkable how much that treatment has really helped me. And I really wish that I could have access to it again, because I sleep better when I get the treatment. I have better recall when I do the treatment. And
is it only a study right now, and it's not available to the public?
It is available to the public. The thing is that it's still experimental.
Yeah.
In this stage. So, particularly the soft chambers, there's, I think, pretty much next to none when it comes to studies for soft chamber hyperbarics, which is too bad, because it's expensive to get a chamber. And then, you know, there's the maintenance with that. And ideally, if you were able to deal with problems in another way, like health mm-hmm. issues in another way, that would be ideal.
Okay.
I just know for me, they can't quite figure out what's wrong. And so that becomes an issue. So, because most of the stuff has gotten much better. Like I said, I no longer have the generalized anxiety. I do struggle with some social anxiety. So there's that. I do have better emotional regulation since doing the treatment, but I'm still struggling with the recall. And it's one of those things that it's taken months for that recall issue to show up. So I'm like, okay. Except for the while, I was kind of doing it on and off. I was able to get some extra treatments.
Yeah.
But now that I've completely stopped, I'm like, okay, the recall is an issue. And I can't remember what the other one was. There's my ADHD right there. So
you just demonstrated that the recall still is an issue.
Yeah, exactly. But it's remarkable. Oh, like it helped with insomnia. Like that was amazing. Like I was struggling with insomnia. Like I would sleep and then I'd wake up and be like, oh my gosh, like I feel amazing. Like this is what sleep's supposed to feel like.
Wow.
And I think people with ADHD, there's like a PubMed on it, and I have dug through the entire article, but it sounds like there is like an actual thing with circadian rhythm or something and sleep being an issue. At least it makes me feel a little bit better that I'm not like, this is an actual thing. And that's what's concerning to me, is that like I got better through these, like more when I actually addressed my physical health, my mm-hmm. mental health improved. And actually, many of the physical health symptoms I got from the surgery have not resolved, but the mental health issues are starting to resolve, which is like weird. Like this was actually what I needed, was to address my physical health. It wasn't to get the surgery, to have healthy body parts removed. What I actually needed and what would have provided relief was to actually look into my diet. And I don't know what else there is other than hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Because nobody else can like give me a treatment or give me something like a supplement or anything to produce the same effects. So something about that is what I needed. But that's what bothers me, is that we're going into these surgeries and it's a lot of stress on the body. It's a lot of stress to be under and to have, you know, for hours at a time, and then to have body parts removed. You have to worry about like nerve sensations afterwards. I and so many other detransitioners have had issues with people not being helpful doctors, mental health professionals, not being helpful when we detransition.
Yeah.
Or even after the surgery. Like for me, I hadn't detransitioned at that point, but I was still not being taken seriously.
Yeah.
We need to have better options out there for somebody who's really struggling. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody who's struggling should be, and like struggling particularly with suicidal ideation, should be going under the knife.
Yeah.
It's like, get that under control, you know, especially like severe mental illness, get that under control before you even consider a surgery. Mm-hmm. Because it's just like, that's a whole other stressor you're adding to your high stress already.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really worries me. But that's how our medical system is set up. It's set up that you have one problem and you have one solution for that problem. It's like you go in for depression, they're going to give you an antidepressant. they're not going to look at
for the root solution.
Right? Yeah, they're not going to look at thyroid, low testosterone. Yeah. They're not going to look at all the other things that may be causing that depression. They're just going to want to give you the antidepressant. And that's the same thing with gender-affirming care. It's not that, well, maybe you have something else going on that's leading to this, because then they consider that conversion therapy.
Right.
You know, you got to be able to rule everything out. You know, this isn't a fair assessment.
Yeah.
If you can't rule out everything because it's politically driven.
Wow. That is such a good point. And I also wanted to ask you, was it when you were experiencing all of these side effects that you realized, wait a second, I made the wrong decision? When did you realize after the surgery that this was the wrong choice?
So it was about a year and a half after the surgery. And what had happened was that I was getting better physically. And then I finally made that connection. And I know that it depends on the detransitioner. And that's the scary thing too, is that there's with detransition, it varies so much. Like, I know people who they wake up from the surgery and they're like, this was not right. Like, they should not have done this. And then I know people, it could take 10 years for them to realize that this was not the answer. So it varies so much. And I know for me, I was disconnected from my body. I've struggled with dissociation. Now, I never met the criteria as far as I know for dissociative disorder, but I do, like, I've been disconnected from my feelings since I was 18. And so I don't know how much that played a role into, like, dealing with all the gender stuff and all that on top of being dissociative. I don't know how much that played a role in me wanting to transition. And, like, it's just, like, we don't know because nobody's investigating that because they would consider it transphobic. So,
right.
Yeah, it's tough. It's, like, this is a very, people are comparing this to being gay, and it's, like, being gay doesn't require medicalization.
Mm.
Being trans pretty much does. That sort of equivalency is getting a lot of people hurt.
That's a really powerful message that does need to be spread far and wide. And that's why actually you are going to be a part of a panel discussion this coming Wednesday. Is that correct?
Yep, that's correct. PEC is holding a panel in Chicago.
At the Bowling Park Golf Club. That's right. It's going to be a whole big event that Camille is going to be a part of. So if you guys are interested, you can come and actually talk to her personally and get advice, get your questions answered. She's going to be a part of, I think there's 6 panelists, but there's going to be several panelists that are going to be at the Bolingbrook Golf Club at 6:30 p.m. They're going to be showing a documentary at, I believe it's 4 o'clock, and they're going to be talking about their experiences as people who have gone through the gender transition experience and come out the other side and realize what they were sold were lies. And so if you guys are interested, look up at the IFI website, illinoisfamily.org. We have all of that information up on there. And personally, I am coming and I'm really excited to hear your guys' presentations and what you guys are going to be discussing. So,
and Camille, I've been listening this whole time and I do have a question that's been kind of rolling in the back of my mind. Were you ever told by your doctors that the surgery would fix your mental health issues?
I don't know if that was ever brought up. So it's weird because it is so patient-led in that I'm like, well, I'm thinking about the surgery, you know, could I have more information? And then it just becomes this sort of, they just push you through and then it doesn't, asking questions. Like for me, it was weird because I actually had to do a second letter saying I was psychologically fit to do the surgery. That's not normal in Oregon. So what probably happened is somebody along the line was like, I think that there's a red flag here and no one discussed this with me. So no one said, hey, I'm actually thinking you might not be a good fit for this. And when I was talking to a lady on the phone, I was like, I didn't think I needed a second letter. And she's like, oh no, you need a second letter. But it wasn't, you need a second letter and here's why we think you need this letter or why we have to do this letter.
There was no explanation.
No explanation.
Did your doctors ever sit down with you and discuss the risks to a surgery? Because my husband has gotten a few surgeries in his life, and every time the doctor will sit down with you, describe the surgery, what they're going to do. You have your pre-ops, you have your appointments, and they discuss all the nitty gritty, and they'll answer any questions that you have. But from what I've heard of other people talking on this issue is that that protocol is completely thrown aside. Would you say that's your experience?
I think that they give you some. So the sensation is one they do talk about, like you won't have the sensation potentially.
Okay.
I think that the nipple grafts maybe falling off was discussed. It's so vague, and also I was in such a bad mental state to be even making that decision that
yeah.
It's like when they talk about true informed consent, I truly don't believe that it is. I think too there were other complications I've heard of since then, like the nerve issues happening elsewhere, things I'd heard after the surgery from other people that I was like, why did you not discuss this with me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the ones they brought up were blood clots, sensation, and movement, restricted movement. And the other issue is that they don't give you alternatives.
Yeah.
So they're not saying, well, this is what you can do to deal with your gender dysphoria that's not requiring surgery, because this is a big issue and a big surgery to take on. But they're not mm-hmm. giving people options of this is how you deal with it, because then it would be considered conversion therapy.
Yeah.
It's really messed up because it's not giving options and it's not looking at all the possibilities for improving your mental health.
Yeah.
So I'm president of Detrans Help, which is a nonprofit by detransitioners for detransitioners. We've reached out to the WHO, the World Health Organization, and we reached out to WPATH, or they're like the transgender standard of care. Like they actually have the standard of care 8, I think is the most recent one that they've authored.
Mm.
So we reached out to both of these organizations and we said, hey, we want to start a dialogue. We're seeing this pattern with detransitioners who are part of these different minority groups, and we have some concerns.
Yeah.
Could we have this discussion with you? And never heard back from either of them. Even when we're trying to reach out and we're trying to make things better for detransitioners and have some recognition of the harm that's been done, it's not happening.
Yeah,
that's really sad to hear. But thank you so much for trying and for continuously making sure that there is a voice out there for people who are struggling with this and who don't know exactly where to turn. How can people get a hold of you and help your mission?
So there's a couple different ways to get a hold of me. I have a website, which is CamilleKiefel.com. I also have the nonprofit Detrans Help. So our contact is help@detranshelp.org. And I also have social media. So I have an All My Links page, which I can hand off to you later. So.
Wonderful. Before we close out, I would like to ask, is there any advice you would have for Generation Z? So we're part of the Generation Z, and that's roughly ages, I think, 11 to 26. And so we have quite a range of listeners. And what would your advice be if someone is struggling with this or knows of somebody who is struggling with wanting to get a surgery to remove healthy body parts? What would you say to them? What would you say to people who are friends with them?
If somebody's considering transition, I guess first off, there are a whole bunch of complications that doctors aren't discussing. They're not telling patients that there are detransitioners, and that's something you do need to know, that there is people who detransition, and we don't know who's going to detransition. Who's a really good candidate for this? Who's not? That's not a part of the discussion,
yeah.
And it really should be.
Right.
The other thing is that if you do detransition, getting care is very difficult. Like I just had a young man reach out to Detrans Help and he is not able to get testosterone. He's reached out, like Planned Parenthood won't give him testosterone. And he's like, but they'll give me estrogen. but they won't give me testosterone. And he's reaching out to all these different organizations, all these trans organizations, and nobody's willing to help him. And so I'm like, okay, well, let me reach out to my network. And so we're kind of in the process of trying to do that now. What makes it difficult is I don't know of anybody in New York right now to help this man. That's a difficult thing because they consider it conversion therapy. So now you have somebody who's being forced to live as the opposite sex.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so we have detransitioners. Abel Garcia is another one. Like, he was forced to live. He had to actually bind because of the fact that he had, even when they removed the implants, he had so much excess fat, and then also weight had been an issue. So he actually had to wear a binder, and so that has left him issues after that. So detransition is so complicated because, and then you have Corena, which I'm going to say he, because I don't think he minds either way, because he's kind of been forced to present as female. That's an issue too, is that you're having detransitioners being forced to live as a sex they don't identify with because of the fact they can't get access to the surgeries. And then it might be more than one surgery they need, like with Abel Garcia. Like, he needed to have the excess fat removed that he had developed because he was taking estrogen. So it sounds like that was partially the reason why he was developing the excess fat. That is a real issue that you have to deal with potentially as a detransitioner. And then all the health complications, like, are they going to be willing to pay for that? Because I reached out to a clinic about potentially reconstruction surgery. So this clinic came back and they said, well, we don't know if we can cover the surgery because you're a cisgender woman. And we don't even cover this for breast cancer survivors. Like, we won't do reconstruction surgery. It's so messy. And insurance, like, there's a senator, can't remember his name at the moment. Was it Dobbs? In Minnesota, he reached out to Blue Cross Blue Shield, and they were saying that they don't cover detransition because they consider WPATH rigorous, and so they won't cover the detransition procedures. Wow. Difficult, because Oregon is saying that they do cover it, but in my case, they said that they would eventually, but I had to have letters saying that I need the surgery, and finding letters for people who aren't, It's difficult because I don't want to go back to a gender-affirming therapist and be told that this was a part of the gender journey. Like, that's painful. Like, I don't want to deal with that. And then the people who are going to be more critical, I guess you'd say gender critical, those individuals are more hesitant to write the letter. They feel it's unethical to do that. They're like, well, I'm a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I feel weird about writing a letter. So that's my experience, is that I can't find anybody to write me a letter to get a reconstruction surgery. So that's kind of what we're dealing with, is that there's people telling, you know, kind of putting on a show, particularly trans rights activists, saying that detransitioners are getting care. And in reality, we're not. Like, you just talk to detransitioners and we're not getting the care we need. So
detransitioners are basically abandoned. After you go the surgery route, they want nothing to do with you, the medical field in general.
Yeah, it's been so ideologically compromised that it's so sad, because this should be objective. Medical care should be objective, but this is completely ideologically compromised, because we can't even have a discussion that this is not going to be a good fit for everyone, that there's some people who are going to detransition, because that's going to be considered conversion therapy. So there's no open dialogue around this. It's like, how can you perform a surgery when you don't know who's not a good candidate for this? It's just like, if someone wants this procedure, they get it. And we're not going to, even when we think that there's, we're not even going to inform them when we see severe mental illness and we don't think it's a good fit. Like, that's a problem. That's a serious problem.
What I'm hearing for sure too is the industries that profit off of this, you know, the institutes that could possibly do the reconstruction surgeries, and the places that can provide testosterone or estrogen and can make a profit off of it, because of their ideology, they will refuse to help. Yeah. And I find that so saddening, because it does seem as if they want to claim that they are helping you by aiding you on your, as you say, your gender journey. But then when it comes down to you opposing the purported mainstream idea, they're going to immediately leave you in the ditch. So is there any way that people like us can help out at all?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the big things is going to probably be figuring out how to reach the left. I think that's going to be a big one, because that's where people are going to be really hurt by this. It's going to be Oregon, Washington, California. And it's sad, because it's, you know, like Vice recently came out with a documentary for detransitioners. And while I think that they did an okay job on it, they also had, it was hosted by someone, or actually I should say the reporter was trans. And in it, the reporter said, he said something like that detransition is fraud. And it's like, and then on top of that, they have a warning on the video talking about conversion therapy. And so I feel like the left is going to be big, like figuring out how to reach these left states, because it's not, it's just, this thing should not be considered a bigotry thing. It just needs to be good medicine. And the recognition that, which they don't seem to care about, is that other minorities are impacted by this. Like, we're seeing a lot of autism, ADHD, the gay and lesbian populations, particularly women with histories of sexual violence. It's a lot of these things that they should be caring about, but aren't reaching them. So it's very surreal, and it's just something that is going to need some work. But I think that the blue states are going to be a big one. I mean, just talking about it, I think, is important in bringing awareness to the issue. And then,
absolutely.
Yeah. And then, I mean, there's some organizations, I guess, potentially, if somebody wants to donate to an organization, there's Detrans Help. There's also PEC. I've worked with them and they've been great. They're the ones putting on the event that it'll be nice to see you there. Yeah. It's there's different things that people can do, and like potentially maybe even getting involved in an organization. But I think that that's some ways that people can help if they wish to.
Well, I'm so sorry at how you have been treated by the entire medical field and by society in general. These things should have never been allowed to happen. And, but I'm thankful that you are spreading awareness of this and that you are actively fighting for people and trying to help people who suffered from possibly the same issues that you had, and to warn them about the fact that surgery is not the answer, that you need to address your root issues. And thank you so much for giving you your time. I know that you probably have a very busy schedule. You have an event coming up, and we are so thankful that you gave us the time to talk to you today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. And it's been a pleasure being on. So thank you.
And until we meet again, let us firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. And thank you for listening. This is Self-Evident.